Hello, friends. How are you? I hope this finds you well. Edith Bowman here. Thank you very much for choosing to listen to this week's episode of Soundtracking. I've also got to say a massive thank you to, well, a whole load of people for a lovely response to last week's episode for Bailey Walsh, which was just really lovely. It was really nice that ABBA Voyage tweeted out about it. And really nice that you guys connected with it as well and found a really interesting insight into the making of that phenomenal show. So much appreciated for everybody who got in touch with regards to that chat last week with Bailey Walsh talking about directing the ABBA Voyage show. This week then, our latest guest on Soundtracking, well, they're partners in both personal and the creative sense, whose latest collaboration sees them bring us the utterly wild and I think fantastic and very funny, very colourful Bullet Train. Husband and wife team of director David Leitch and producer Kelly McCormick have a lot of fun with a great cast to tell the story of a motley crew of rogues who all mysteriously find themselves on the same Japanese train. I'm not going to lie, the results are bonkers, but in a very entertaining way. As well as featuring an array of truly brilliant needle drops, Bullet Train is very deftly scored by Dominic Lewis. And it's with one of Dominic's cues that we'll begin. All aboard! David, Kelly, welcome to Soundtracking. This is where I get to talk about the relationship with music and film. And this film is a great example of how beautiful this relationship can be.
Yes, thank you.
I have to say, yesterday I had the luxury of watching the film in a beautiful cinema on my own. And I'm kind of glad because I made so much noise from reacting to the film. It's such a physical experience. It was awesome. Where does the music start, the journey with music for your film start?
I mean, I always have a few instinctual songs, usually needle drops that are... cuts from albums that are inspiring me as I'm reading the script. I mean, I started this process during Atomic Blonde, where obviously that was driven by music in an era as we were trying to set up a world of 80s cool.
Yeah.
And so I was starting to put the needle drops in the script right away. This really, the Stayin' Alive track was one of the first things that stuck in my mind, sort of on theme for Ladybug's character, but also sort of like the tone of the movie that I wanted. Like, it was fun.
Yeah.
I wanted to get the energy of the crowd to understand, like, you can go along for this ride and this is how, you know, you can feel happy, you know?
Yeah.
And so what's great about needle drops is that you can access emotion immediately. And
yeah.
I think if they're used right, it can really help you as a storyteller.
Stay now.
it started there, and then we collaborated with a great composer on this, Dominic Lewis, who elevated everything along the way. We recorded those needle drops with artists from Japan. He created original material that we can get into, and the collaboration with him has been a joy, and he's taken us on a bullet train of his own.
Yeah, the needle drops started dropping out because Dom's
score was so incredible,
and songs were so incredible that it just started going like, oh, like the wolf sequence was supposed to be, I can't remember what song, but a song, yeah, identifiable, like love song, ballad. Yeah. That with like Latin influence, and suddenly like Dom shows up with this amazing
piece. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's incredible. He doesn't know Spanish. He's like trying to sing through the Spanish and like, this is how I want it to feel. And it's supposed to be about love and all this stuff. And then ended up, you know, adding like lyrics with Alejandro Sanz.
Yeah. Yeah.
And got him to sing it. And it's just extraordinary.
He even calls him his flamenco brother now, Alejandro does. Because Dominic's voice is incredible. And I think it was even daunting to an artist like Alejandro to hear the demo.
Oh, wow.
We had the demo in the movie for the longest time.
And it was amazing.
And his powerful, raspy voice. He would do, he's a great composer, but he also was in Hans's camp for years as a vocal, and he did vocal stuff for him. And yeah. So he, I want you to ask more questions.
But we'll go on with Dom. I love it.
We would just go on
50 minutes. Like, he's a genius. Boy, sin
It's brilliant because you have these two very iconic songs that have been re-recorded by Japanese artists, which is brilliant. So you've got Staying Alive and then Holding Out for a Hero.
Yes.
Which is phenomenal. And the vision of Michael Shannon with the wind machine in the hair.
That wasn't a wind machine. That was just real.
That's just how we
live. Around like that.
Yeah, totally. I was just like, yes, I need that in my life every day. It's just brilliant. And the timing of things is just so perfectly done. In between that, you've got a bit of Engelbert Humperdinck in there. And then, but that's reused in very clever ways. So you have different versions of it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got that slightly kind of morphed version of it. I don't want to say too much about where it's used because you don't want to give too much about the story away for people and stuff as well. And then you've also got the version with the Cockney Rejects in there as well, which is just kind of, it's so clever. Let's talk about that track in particular and the reusing of that and how that journey's formed. And
yeah, I think it started with Aaron Taylor Johnson's character. He started putting on
West Ham socks and he had a West Ham tattoo.
So
and he was like, he's, you know, he's a West Ham fan. I'm like, great. And so so is Dominic.
He's so, like, you know, there's this song.
No, in real life, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, there's this song they sing. It's kind of random. And it's like, I'm forever blowing bubbles or whatever it is. Yeah. And he started playing it for us. And it's like, maybe we should just deconstruct this in all these different ways to let it be the theme song of basically their brotherhood. Because it's the theme song of the Brotherhood of West Ham, basically. And it just is so ridiculously perfect.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
So high, nearly reach the sky.
again, there were a lot of like fun things like that, discoveries on this movie. And we were really fortunate that fate brought us all these happy accidents. Like, again, without the West Ham socks, he wouldn't have, you know, I mean, we never mentioned West Ham. Like, you know, you just,
who would?
But then Dominic, yeah, exactly. I get that a lot.
Especially here today. Well, as my 9-year-old calls them, West Ham and cheese. Because his granddad's a West Ham fan, so yeah.
Got it. Yeah. So again, it was beautiful. And again, having a Brit do the score, he could really lean in. Engelbert Humperdinck, that was a whole nother thing. Like, he was such a fan of the song.
First person we approached.
Yeah, first person we approached, it was Dominic's idea.
He's got a million siblings, and one of his sisters they called Bubbles. I think it was her actual name, Bubbles.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And that was sort of her theme song for their whole family.
He'd been singing it his whole life, but he'd never recorded it. And now he's 80 something, and he came and recorded it with us at Capitol Records.
It's a new recording.
It's a new recording. We did it especially for the
movie. He's going to start singing it at his concerts. He still has concerts.
Yeah. Oh, we got to get Sony to drop the behind the scenes on that. It's amazing.
It's amazing. He has bananas behind his headphones so that he can hear himself better. And it's just like these smushy bananas behind his ears. Yeah, it's so crazy.
He likes to hear playback, but he likes to hear his voice. And he's figured out the perfect width, the space that he needs. He puts bananas behind his ears. And it's just like, I am the most surreal.
It was so cool.
Bubbles with bananas.
So cool. It was the best day.
A delight of a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like this wonderful, you seem very open to collaboration. You don't always hear that. You don't always hear people who are open to people coming in with ideas and throwing things your way. And it's so lovely and refreshing to hear that. And you can see how excited you are to share those stories and how that part of the process is kind of what's made this film so great, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, it might be. I mean, David is an extraordinary collaborator. And I think it might come from the fact that he was below the line for so many years and so knew how the department sort of integrated and connected and kind of created the things that became the movie ultimately. And, you know, he is very much a guy, and a lot of people say this and aren't really it, but like, you know, that best idea wins. And how do we amplify each other's ideas? Because filmmaking is a craft that is made among many. And it's just really always really exciting. And the movie just keeps continuing to evolve because of it, I think.
That's so great.
I love the process. And I love to see it transform and evolve. And
he's always behind it, like manipulating. Like puppet master.
It's long lead. You know, if you're fighting long lead battles and you're finding opportunities and you have to be open to the universe. It's like fate. I'm not lying. Like making a movie is like bullet train sometimes. It really is. Like, how's it going to come to you? How's it going to come back to you?
And react to those things that face themselves at you as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mentioning, Aaron and the twins and Brian. I mean, I want a prequel. I want an origin story for those
Grace.
Two. Please. Because it's such a beautiful chemistry relationship that we watched, you know, those two. You know, to start with the whole process.
That last song is actually really cool too. The one where Brian finds Tangerine.
Yeah.
500 miles.
Yeah.
Yes. Which is a Japanese ballad from a long, long time ago, right?
Yeah, it's a folk song that was popular in Japan. And I'm not sure its origins, but the group that sang it was like a 60s group. But that's a original track.
You like you say, there is so much, the score is phenomenal because it does so many jobs as well. You have the kind of themes for the different characters as well, which is great. But then you almost have themes for the different carriages as well, which I kind of, the quiet carriage is kind of like, okay, it's time for a bit of meditation. And even the quiet fighting is genius. It's so great when Brad and Brian are trying to do quiet fighting. It's great. But it's, you know, I kind of almost watched the film and then had to kind of spew out all my kind of thoughts quickly afterwards. But that's a clever thing, not just the kind of the actors and the characters having themes, but physicalities having themes as well as the journey as they're moving through that train.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, those are all the layers that I like to fold into a movie. And I think that having source music playing that is just triggering something that you're not even thinking about, but, you know, subconsciously makes you aware, you know, that crazy Momomon theme song that Dominic came up, you know, ba-da-da-da, ba-bop. And it plays in one part and it's annoying. Really funny. And then in another scene in the movie, it's like really disturbing.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. You know, it's like these really disturbing moments and you're hearing this da 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 in the background. And you're just like, I don't know how to feel right now.
I'm torn.
It's great. And so I love playing with source. And we had so much fun, creative fun in the movie.
Yeah. Our first conversation with Dom was like, this is like Peter and the Wolf. Like every character is so bold and so big. And we have to articulate so much of each of them in very short periods of time because there's seven and they all are complete and full, you know? So it was like, we need themes for each of them in a way that you kind of always know where you're at with them, even if it's like, you know, changing and evolving and growing as you go through it. It's still got the same tone, intonation and vibe that, like, you know, you started with.
Yeah.
So that was really a touchstone for us where we kind of were like, let's do our version of Peter and the Wolf with these crazy characters.
Yeah, try and bring it all around at the end. And he did... he created a lot of themes before we even started shooting. So we had them to play on set. And not all of them landed, but I would say like a good half, three quarter.
We
were working with, you know, we had the White Death theme and we had Princess theme worked out and we had the Elders theme. And I would play them when we were in different scenes to get the emotion there, you know.
And the crew loved it.
Yeah, and the crew was like, this is what this is going to be cut to. And I'm like, it was fun. Yeah.
I've got to ask about Thomas the Tank Engine. I mean, I have two boys and quite a large portion of my life has been in very much submerged in Thomas the Tank Engine world. But where did that, was that in the book? Was that in the, was it?
It was in the book.
Wow.
Yeah. And was such a brilliant sort of character device and like seeing this character with this odd superpower and sort of a code that he bases life on. We love it. But it was in the book. It was not it's one of those things that is truly inspired.
Yeah. I mean, I think the points that David uses it and like, you know, how it really pays off in the end in such a brilliant and unexpected way was past the book. But, it was definitely there. The energy was there. The ideas were there.
I'm really glad you didn't use the theme tune anywhere as well.
You were like, I've heard it enough.
It's like,
I think you got
too many early mornings. totally. But I tell you who I absolutely loved on screen was, I'm going to apologize for the pronunciation, but the elder, Hiroyuki.
Yeah.
A phenomenal presence on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He just makes you feel safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing casting throughout this film, but with him particularly and his theme, there's just this beautiful synergy with it all. Do you mind talking a little bit about that character and about that theme in particular? Because it's got that real cultural relevance to, you know, Japan and the journey this train's on, really, I think, as well.
It's true. Like, his journey is the journey they're all on, ultimately. I mean, they're servicing a lot of different, you know, own karmic debts and fate connections. But at the end, they're servicing his revenge. So yeah. That was really sort of the heart of the movie. And what's great is that in the book, we wanted to really like bring some of the characters from the book and anchor them in the movie, like Andrew Koji's character and Hiroyuki's character and their dynamic and that relationship, and make that the heartbeat of the movie, the soul part mm-hmm. of it. And Hiro's an incredible actor. I've had the fortunate to work with him mm-hmm. a couple times, and he's brilliant.
Yeah, he really is. And he's really great at action. I mean, his sword work is phenomenal, and he's so graceful. And everyone was just like, oh, my God, you're really impressed with him. He's
it's like royalty, master. Almost, you know, that kind of thing. Of the you know, he's on screen, but he still has this presence that makes you...
Yeah.
You know, and the music, to speak of it, really supported it. I think Dominic did an incredible job of like making that stuff emotional. And Watoro's theme, we called it like the heart, the sort of strings that come in that are just like you are feeling. It's sort of epic. It's grand. It's traditional. It's like it's everything you want, just opposed to all this craziness.
Yeah.
So it really did help anchor the movie.
To score or give the right sound to a fight scene? Where do you start with that? Because there's musicality to movements, there's fluidity to movements. So what comes first? Because hearing you talk about the fact that there was music playing on set, and because of your background, I don't know if you're involved in the choreography of those scenes and stuff and mm-hmm. things like that, or being that specific about it, but what's the kind of journey of that side of things with those scenes?
I mean, sound in fights is... half the battle. It's really important. You have to temper it. It just depends on the tone of the movie. You know, I think like the Quiet Car, we're working specifically to make those sounds work for the conceit that we have with the music and play. That was hard. In Atomic Blonde, where you rip out the music and there's like 7 minutes of, you know, Lorraine Broughton uncut going through this traumatic thing. You're heightening the sound and you're removing music and gives you a different feeling. So it's all part of a plan, and it's, you have to put it into the mix early on. You're thinking about it when you're choreographing the scene, like where is the sound going to land, because you're going to be relying on it, you know. Again, it's like half the battle in a fight scene.
Yeah, one of the challenges on this one was the end. So when Brad and Lemon, you know, when Ladybug and Lemon are having their sort of thing in the conductor's car, and then, you know, Mike, White Death and Elder are having their thing in the back of the train, they're very different emotions going on. And there's different stakes too, actually, you know, and so it's like, how do you combine and twist and turn so that it's not jarring? But you are sort of switching focus. And if you listen to that section, we spent a lot of time on that section. Mm-hmm. And it was probably one of the biggest challenges I think we've ever had musically, mm-hmm. how to like sort of integrate the two of them and make them feel like their own pieces, but that they actually flow together as well. It was hard. That one was hard.
Where do you start when you're choreographing, you know, a fight scene? What's the starting point of that?
It's generally the character. Mm-hmm. Like, where does this person need to go in this scene? And what do I need to see them do? Like, what do I need to learn about them?
Yeah.
And then it's like, from there, it's like, okay, how am I going to define that? And how are we going to make it interesting and then compelling? But the first is always, what does the story need to know about this character when the scene is done? Because otherwise, it becomes an empty thing, unless there's a shock in it or there's a gimmick in it. Or, but for the most part, you need to know more about the character, right?
Yeah. Or, I mean, if it's spectacle action, it might be a little bit different. Yeah. It's like you want a propulsive sort of energy to it. And sort of if it's more plotty, it's a really, really different, you know, sort of vibe musically as well as choreo sort of probably. But yeah. Most of our stuff is character based, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kelly, with regards to like this amazing, the production on this film as well. And it's so beautiful across the, you know, the train is kind of like, God, I want to be on it. You know, yeah. I want to go on this journey. It is, as a producer, in terms of the, I guess some people might look at it as limitations because you're confined to this space, but obviously you have a few exterior things as well. But does that give you a kind of wonderful opportunity to play with that? With what you have as a producer?
It was one of the things that that was a big challenge at the beginning. And it was also one of the reasons we did it, because COVID, we thought that if it were sort of more contained, it was a little safer. It was before the vaccine. So none of us knew much about the disease. And yeah, we wanted to get our film family working. And so, you know, we were weirdly able to use the Sony lot, which you never get to do as a film anymore. Not only shoot in L.A., barely people shoot in L.A., but also the lots are used for TV and they're booked for years and years and years. So the fact that it was open and available and we used like three different like stages was fate. and became... You know, we sort of look at a lot of things, problem, opportunity, but became a bit of an opportunity in the sense that I think if we could have gone to Japan, we would have. And, you know, using LED screens and creating the sort of, you know, heightened, allowed us to create a heightened world that, you know, I think the movie needs, because it's a fable to, you know, through and through. And so if it was grounded a little bit more in reality and what we could have sort of been seeing instead of like, you know, sort of fabricating and heightening, it would have felt very different.
Yeah.
And this one in particular, I think we did not have very many cars in production, or really, honestly, very many. I think we only had one
platform.
We just redressed. And we kept redressing them again and again and again. So it was a sort of set deck nightmare, but they did such a phenomenal job.
There's one particular... Yes. Station scene actually where Aaron's character says it's like some fucking 80s dance off. Such a great line. And then that kind of that cue that comes in off the back of that, and that scene is brilliant. But the tone is so great as well. And I was reading, you know, the idea that there's so much fun in this film for me, but also it's invested emotionally. And your aim as filmmakers is to make something that's original. I think that you look at the films that you've worked on, you know, as a team, and that's something that you're definitely doing. And that's got to do with so many things, visually, the tone of things, sonically as well. And I wanted to, I hope you don't mind me asking, but, you know, I know the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club, but to think back to... You know, working with Brad as a stunt double on that, to the Circle of Now and directing him in this film, that must be lovely to think about that journey.
It is. And I've said it a couple of times in this junket, like it is about fate. You know, it was really beautiful those years that I worked with him to provide my skills as a choreographer and a stunt performer to like support his characters and help him build characters that were influencing these movies. And now that our careers have gone this way and he's at the top of his acting chops and he's like in the prime of his career and has all this knowledge, and I've risen to the director's chair, he can create a character for my film and support it. And actually one that actually is on theme and like supports the other actors and is like, his ideas are bringing up the tone, and like, he's a brilliant collaborator, and it's really just beautiful that fate brought us back for this movie, and it's kind of poetic that way.
But I feel like this is that he's not had a chance to play something like this as well. This is a different role for him, and you can see he's having so much fun with it. It just pours out of the screen. It's so great to watch. Yeah.
We agree. We feel really lucky that he wanted to be that guy. I mean, he brought a lot of that. And he brought the hat. He brought the glasses. He brought the vibes. He brought the existential crisis. That's what was in the script. And
he brought the smart toilet.
That was just so great.
Yep. He brought the fun. He wanted it to be fun and, you know, and really use his, he's really funny and he's got great comedy chops and he wanted to bring all that. And we felt really lucky to get that version of Brad Pitt. I mean, I don't think it's maybe been seen before.
We want to see more of that for sure. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're impressed with his role as a stunt man as well. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, how did he do?
I am. I was saying to him, it's a different era. Like, I don't remember, you know, going to an old school bar in Hollywood and drinking, Bloody Marys, and or like having to pick you up in the afternoon because I don't drive you around. But there was an era of the Hal Needhams and the Burt Reynolds that they were reflecting on, that was like that dynamic that's sort of legendary in the stunt world. So yeah, I think he did an incredible job and it's fun. Like,
yeah,
those movies are so fun.
Yeah.
Quentin's movies are genius. Amazing.
Yeah. I'm excited about Fall Guy too.
Oh,
thank you.
We are too. It's been fun. The pre-production process has been really fun and we're looking forward to making it.
So. I'm hoping that you might have the original theme in there somewhere. Whether it's Ryan and you doing it.
We were listening to it for a while.
Yeah, it's like, what's that line? I'm the unknown stuntman who makes Eastwood look so fine.
No, that part's okay.
That part's okay. The rest of it's I mean, bring it up to date. Definitely, lyrically. But, you know, it's like maybe get Ryan to redo it. That might be, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, Lee May just did a great job. Yeah, exactly. I'm so excited about it. And I'm just, you know, I'm, as a film fan, it's a great ride to watch your film. So thank you for this. Thanks for your time.
From Bullet Train, that's the Monoman theme, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with David Leitch and Kelly McCormick. My huge thanks to David and Kelly for taking the time to talk to us. Bullet Train is on general release now and is very much in the spirit of the John Wick movies, so go watch it. Indeed, David co-directed John Wick with Chad Stahelski, and you can hear my chat with Chad and none other than Keanu Reeves if you head to edithbowman.com along with every other episode of the podcast. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And do send us an email at info@edithbowman.com. It could be to tell us about your thoughts on Bullet Train or any of the films we've talked about. Some of you are suggesting people you'd like to hear on forthcoming episodes, so please do get in touch, info@edithbowman.com. Next week, I am thrilled to welcome back to Soundtracking the one and only Mr. Jordan Peele to talk about his phenomenal new film, Nope, which stars Kiki Palmer and Daniel Kaluuya. Jordan Peele is next week's guest on Soundtracking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.